It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When former Pittsburgh Police Chief Nate Harper was indicted and sentenced to 18 months in prison last month, we received a number of comments from listeners regarding the ways to punish crime. What types of crimes justify a state prison sentence? What are the alternatives? We're exploring this issue with John Wetzel, Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. He's responsible for the state prison system and part of a sentencing commission which is developing tools to help judges better assess the risks and needs of offenders. He joins us now in Studio A. John Wetzel, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. How do you feel about intermediate punishment for drug and alcohol offenses and lighter sentencing for certain misdemeanors? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. John Wetzel, you have talked about your desire to see real reductions in the prison population. But as that happens, you have to close prisons, which has an adverse economic impact. So how do you feel about the trade-off here?
Well, I think as a society, we've got to decide what we want out of our criminal justice system. And I would argue quite simply that what we want is that when someone becomes criminally involved, that when they come out of the back end of our system, they're less likely to commit a new crime. And for that to happen, we need to make good decisions at the front end. The reality is that we have 51,000 individuals incarcerated who, oh, by the way, have 81,000 children who are also impacted. And we don't need 51,000 people incarcerated to accomplish what we're looking for. 70% of our offenders are addicted. 21% of our offenders are mentally ill. And some of that group and a large portion of that group, or at least a portion of that group, we could put at a lower level on the corrections continuum, get them the treatment they need, address the root cause of the crime, and have better outcomes and spend less money. And that's been the experience in Texas, I said, who kind of led this charge in reforming corrections because we've overutilized incarceration. Sure, we have had communities built up around our prisons. And so when last year when we closed two prisons as our population started being reduced, it has a terrible impact on the community, a terrible short-term impact on the community. But do we really want to use our prison system as an economic development engine? I mean, that's the question. And if by doing that, it ends up having people come out more likely to commit another crime and it has – kids more likely to get incarcerated in the front place. What are we accomplishing? And is it really worth the money if we're spending more out of the left pocket than we're bringing in the right pocket? And I would say no.
Why should we be surprised that Texas is creating landmark reforms?
In criminal justice, because Texas executes more people than anybody else in the country. So when we hear Texas and criminal justice, you think execution. But the reality is they were at a place 5 or 10 years ago where they looked and said, we're not going to keep trying to spend our way. And the real issue is that we don't provide enough treatment for the offenders. So they created a series of treatment programs in their prison, dropped population, and oh, by the way, at the same time, crime dropped in the community. And at the end of the day, our correction system should be about reducing crime.
And you think somebody would have thought of this sooner. I want to go back to the 1970s during the Milton Schaap administration. The state prison population grew by about 140 inmates per year. Under Dick Thornburgh, Governor Thornburgh, it rose to 800 per year. Under Bob Casey, it grew to 1,600 per year. Under Tom Ridge, the population increase actually fell to about 1,400, and it stayed there through the Rendell administration. Why did we see this jump? Why in the last 30, 40 years have we seen such a jump in the prison population?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. Number one, a lot of people got elected on getting tough on crime. Number two, our response to the drug situation, you could argue, was an over-response. And the war on drugs really needed to be a two-front war. So we needed to attack the drug dealers, which is a supply end, but we also need to provide an equal level of treatment for the youth and to get rid of the demand or at least mitigate the demand, and we didn't do that. So a lot of people got locked up over that time frame. And what you accurately pointed out is the 24 years before the Corbett administration came here, we averaged an increase of 1,500 inmates a year or adding a prison every year and a half. In our 3 years, we added on average of 60 inmates a year. So we – and at the same time, crime in Pennsylvania continues to be flat and slightly decreasing. So right here in Pennsylvania over the past 3 years, you've seen less people get locked up. The past 2 years, we've actually seen a reduction in population. And oh, by the way, crime has not gone up. And that's been the experience all around the country.
You are part of a sentencing commission which is developing tools to help trial judges better assess the risks and the needs of offenders. What are some of the tools that might work here?
So we know that what that really comes down to is identifying the root cause of the crime. And based on the root cause of the crime and based on the number of prior arrests, the age of the offender, based on a bunch of other factors, we can predict the likelihood that the individual will commit another crime. Then those good screen gives us the specific – it's called criminogenic needs or needs that lead to crime. Gives us a specific criminogenic needs. And then here's the rub. If we can identify what the root causes are, identify what these things that are causing crime and address them generally through programming but sometimes through therapy that we call cognitive behavioral therapy or teaching inmates how to make better decisions, how to think differently – we can reduce their likelihood of future crime. That has not been part of our system historically.
It sounds like, yeah, that you would if somebody was an 18-year-old offender, they were an adult, they were treated like an adult offender, there was no consideration given to their particular individual situation, and by doing that, by having that kind of rubber stamp rigid approach, that you really weren't meeting the criminals at their level of need to reform them.
Correct. And when people hear that, they go, this is not about the criminal. But guess what? If that criminal gets out older, angry, and more likely to commit another crime and move next to you, whose problem is it now? And that's what we forget. What we forget is that 90% – I have 51,000 people incarcerated today. 95% of them will get out. And they're coming soon to a neighborhood near you. And so we really have to ask ourselves, what do we want out of our correction system? And we can't forget. So a couple key points that you really need to pay attention to. Number one, we spend more money than we need to get good outcomes in our correction system. So who wants to spend more money on corrections than we have to be safe? So we don't need to do that. There's a group on the right who certainly says, let's not spend the money on that. So that's why the right's at the table.
Well, and you say – you were quoted as saying, we really don't need to hear more politicians saying they're tough on crime. I want to hear one say, let's get smart on crime. So
and we're hearing them. And we're hearing them. They don't always follow through on that, but at least they're saying it. And we have people on the other side, on the left, who care about the offenders generally. And I'm overgeneralizing, obviously. But I'll tell you the one group that both sides care about, and that's these kids. And you look at kids who have – like I said, we have 51,000 inmates who have 81,000 children. So that's children directly impacted. But also when you look in certain communities, especially communities of color, and you look at school systems where school systems are not delivering education, where kids are dropping out, those kids, especially if they're black or they're brown, are going to end up with me, period. So when now let's take this back to money. So we spend $2 billion on corrections. If I told you we could spend $1.5 billion on corrections to get the same outcomes, that's $500 million that we would gladly be spending in education, in human services, in things that impact our communities in a positive way and impact those kids. And the thing I'm most proud of as an administration is we have not just focused on reducing population, which we've been successful, and reducing crime, which we've been successful, but we're now focusing on creating programs to impact those kids in particular. And April 24th, we're going to be making a big announcement about an initiative specifically kind of started by the Secretary of Corrections to impact kids, black and brown young men in the community. Because let me tell you a number that will shock you. One out of every 15 black men between the ages of 20 and 32 are in a state prison today in Pennsylvania.
One out of
every 15
wow.
young black men between the ages of 20 and 32 are in a state prison. This is not a sustainable pattern.
It's a very sobering statistic. We're talking with John Wetzel. He is Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, 412-246-2002. How do you feel about intermediate sentencing, punishment for drugs and alcohol offenses, and lighter sentencing for certain misdemeanors? We'd like to hear from you. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We have a tweet from the Hill District Consensus Group, and their question is, has the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections considered more humane models such as Bastøy Prison Island in Norway? And what kinds of models have you looked at when reforming the state prison system?
Yeah, well, we certainly have put a big focus and a big emphasis on creating environments inside the prisons where people can get well. And what does that mean? That means that we're using evidence-based programming that we know will address these needs. But it also means that we're creating an environment inside our prisons that's, first of all, safe. Because if you're focused at making sure you're not getting stabbed in the neck with a shank, you can't focus on being self-actualized. And again, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But we really need to have a safe environment that starts with that. But we also need to have an environment where inmates and staff alike are respected, where the interaction between inmates and staff are appropriate, positive. And so we are putting a big focus on creating more – you can call it more humane. I would call it creating a better environment. Either way, we're talking the same thing.
How do you eliminate the abuse, particularly when it comes to – I mean, we've heard horrible stories about the treatment that is inflicted on inmates, and it oftentimes comes from the prison guards who are part of a system that doesn't seem or traditionally has not seemed to care about being humane.
Yeah, and I think some of that's perception. Certainly there's abuse. And how do you eliminate it? You don't. You mitigate it. You put systems in place.
You don't identify it?
There's no system. There's no person who runs a system that has 26 prisons, 16,000 inmates, or 51,000 inmates, 16,000 staff who can honestly tell you that I'm going to completely eliminate. You work to do that every day. You hire great staff. You put an emphasis on professionalism. You train them. You have great supervision. And you put checks and balances in place. So what we did, we had a bad abuse case here in Pittsburgh that landed on my lap my first week. And as we were improving it, what we found and what you always find these things is that when you hear about a corrections officer, you don't hear about that corrections officer that cuts the inmate down and saves his life or does CPR on the inmate or breaks up the fight. You hear about the correctional officer that abuses the inmate. And that is the minority, the vast minority of staff. And then you fire them and you get rid of them and you prosecute them. You have a zero tolerance for that. But at the same time, the vast majority of our staff are great staff. We have 16,000 people working for the department.
And to be fair, we should point out that there are risks to the guards and that they are sometimes harmed. And there have been instances where they've been killed. So we know that – we know it's a two-way street and that they need to be tough. But I think that it would be safe to say that sometimes that does get out of hand.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you, the key is communication skills. It's not – you know, when we have put a big emphasis on training staff on how to communicate, a big emphasis on how to deal with mentally ill offenders. Imagine if I told you 20 years ago or 30 years ago that the Secretary of Corrections would have more mentally ill folks under my purview than the Secretary of Department of Public Welfare, but that's the truth.
I don't know that many people would be surprised by that.
You should be. You think that we've closed state hospitals all over the place, and maybe if we properly funded the infrastructure in the community, that was a good idea. I would argue that we didn't do that. So now 21% of our offenders are in jail or mentally ill, and to deal with mentally ill offenders, we have to train our staff better, and that's what we've really put our focus on, improving the skills of staff to manage this population.
And you've also discovered that psychiatrists weren't treating the correct inmates. Talk about how you're dealing with that.
So that probably isn't stated exactly how I would state it. So we didn't have a good enough system at the front end to accurately identify mentally ill offenders. And it really starts with a good diagnosis at the front end and then focusing our resources on the folks who need it. And as I think the Pittsburgh Post last week ran a story on how the shortage of psychiatrists in Pennsylvania, That's a really big challenge for us. So properly identifying at the front end and putting a more of an emphasis on keeping mentally ill offenders healthy in general population as opposed to unhealthy and in some kind of hospital bed is really where we put the focus on.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation with John Wetzel, Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Let's go to Kev in the Hill District. Kev, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, Kev, you're on the air. How are you?
How you doing? I'm calling, okay? You know, I'm a resident of the Hill District. I heard him speaking about the Hills District, and not only that, I was listening to your program here.
Well, thank you.
And I was just wondering, as far as what are the people doing up there in the state prison system to address, like, the dual diagnosis people coming in from the county jails that's on psych meds and stuff, and they actually get up to the prisons, and then their psych eval is not being addressed, and it's causing all kinds of confliction inside the prison and, most of all, personally to the person who's diagnosed with whatever.
Well, yeah, so we've essentially restructured our mental health system, starting with the front end, doing good diagnoses up front, and then putting the most serious mentally ill offenders, which is about 7 to 10% of our population, those who have such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, putting them on a separate track throughout our system where they're seen more regularly. They're literally seen weekly by a psychologist, monthly by a psychiatrist. Monitoring their meds, putting them on specialized units with staff specially trained in dealing with mentally ill offenders, and increasing the amount of activity those folks have. So we've made significant strides. And then on the back end, we've been working with county. So if we have a seriously mentally ill offender coming home, we actually start communicating with the local case manager who's going to take this individual and try to create some continuity of care.
Explain, and thank you for that question, Kev. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. John, could you explain what pre-release programs are and why they should be eliminated?
Okay, so pre-release was a program where our lowest risk offenders, our offenders who've done everything we've asked them to do, were released a year or up to a year early to a halfway house. And they stay in that halfway house until they got part of our caught to their minimum, then they could be released. We eliminated the program because it was failing. And what does failing mean? It means that a third of the offenders, lowest risk, every one offender who was in pre-release was recommended for parole. A third of them would fail, get locked back up, and spend more time than they otherwise would have if they weren't out on pre-release. The second issue our administration had, and there's been a long concern for the law enforcement community, is this whole notion of truth in sentencing. So let's say, God forbid, you're a victim of a crime. An individual gets a 3 to 6 month sentence. They spent 6 months on average in the county jail. They come in to DOC, the Department of Corrections. They spend a year. All of a sudden, you as a victim get a letter from us saying, hey, we're getting ready to put this individual out in a halfway house. You pick up the phone and call the DA and say, you told me they were doing 3 years. It's only been a year since they've been out of the county. And now I'm getting this letter. They're getting ready to put them out in a halfway house. Pennsylvania's pride themselves forever on truth in sentencing. So if we say 3 years, it's 3 years. Pre-release kind of flew in the face of that. But at the same time, and why it really made sense, at the same time, we looked at parole violators. That's people who are on state parole, on supervision, and who start violating state parole. So they're hot urines. They're staying out after curfew. And those people, when they were brought back to state prisons, their recidivism rate increased by 5%. So instead of putting pre-release out who were good inmates who were otherwise failing, we eliminated that. Instead of it, in those beds, we put parole violators. So instead of bringing a parole violator back to a prison, put them in a halfway house. Better outcomes on both ends.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Tyler in Zelianopol. Tyler, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. I wanted to first say that I agree that something needs to be changed with the correctional system. But my comment is, are we afraid that with all of the reform that we're taking to make these correctional systems more beneficial to people, are we afraid of creating a too beneficial program for them so that people are more likely to commit a crime to be placed into the facility instead of avoiding it?
Could you clarify that, Tyler? You're saying – I'm sorry. Could you restate your question?
Yeah. If you're they're going to be putting in place these corrections to people so that they can receive the help that they need, so when they leave, they're less likely to commit crime. I thought the prison systems were designed so that people are not going to commit crimes to avoid the prison system. Are we going to be putting in place these corrections so that people are more likely to commit crime to be put into the prison in the first place?
So
a bit convoluted there, but I mean.
I mean, so the premise of that question really, you hear a lot is that we need to make our prisons harsher because then people they don't want to come there.
Tyler's saying make them harsher so it's a deterrent to crime.
Yeah, that's kind of the ancillary what Tyler's saying. So what he's saying is if it's too nice, people are going to get locked up on purpose. First of all, that's not going to happen. Second of all, what the research says is creating harsh environments, just creates worse people when they get out. And again, they're coming back to your community at a rate probably between 700 and 1,000 are going to come right back here to Allegheny County.
And they're going to be less skilled, probably a bit more bitter and angry.
Older, angrier, without addressing addiction, without addressing mental health, without addressing the root cause of the crime.
Speaking of addiction, we have a question about that from Ruth in Squirrel Hill. Ruth, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Ruth. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Ruth. Welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. First of all, I think your show is wonderful.
Thank you.
And now I'm very glad that you have this gentleman on from the prison system. Someone already spoke about mental illness. I was very interested in how you treat people with mental illness. I'm a retired nurse. And Mr. Wetzel also mentioned drug addiction. There are lots of standard treatments for drug addiction. Are you offering anything to prisoners who are addicted?
How are you treating addicts?
Yes. Well, thank you, Ruth, for that question. Yes, we have what we call therapeutic communities, which are in essence inpatient drug and alcohol rehab facilities in every one of our prisons. In addition to that, some of the areas along these lines that we're going to, and right here in SCI Pittsburgh, we have a veteran service unit. So 7% of our population are military veterans. What we know about military veterans, a very high incidence of post-traumatic stress disorder. So we've created a housing unit and a program that puts veterans, that addresses the addiction issue, which is often seen along with the PTSD, but also addresses the trauma issues. And it's a partnership with the VA. So we're connecting these guys who served our country honorably when they get out. So yes, we have drug and alcohol rehab, both inpatient, outpatient, every facility. We're also doing some other interesting, unique things like servicing veterans.
You have eliminated the longstanding policy of shipping inmates to facilities as far away from home as possible. What went into your decision here?
Well, it was a dumb policy, so it's easy to eliminate dumb policies. What the research says is that if an offender is going to be successful when they get out, one of the key things is the supports they have in their community. Sending offenders as far away from home as possible and thinking that they're going to keep those supports is foolhardy at best.
We had another tweet. How is Pennsylvania's Department of Corrections working with communities to address the school-to-prison pipeline?
Well, it's interesting you would mention that. So in Philadelphia, for instance, we do GIS mapping. So we map where every offender is going back. Our research shop has been working with folks in Philadelphia to also map truancy and overlay those things. So look at where we're having common issues. The second thing we're doing, and I mentioned it earlier, is that on April 24th, we're going to be announcing a huge initiative, a partnership with community groups and the Department of Corrections and business community to specifically impact young men of color. And that's all the details I can give
you. You mentioned that earlier,
right
now.
It's going to be a big deal.
I'm dying to hear more. Can you give us an exclusive here?
No. I can't, but what I will guarantee is I'll get you an embargoed press release about a day before so you guys can be in the loop on it. But we really – I mean, that question gets right to the core of the matter. The core of the matter is that especially in our lower socioeconomic communities, especially in communities of color, we're failing these kids, and that we can improve our system in corrections. We can improve the front end, make better decision-making. We can improve the back end, do a better job with reentry. But if we don't do anything to fix that feeder system, we're going to stay where we're at, and it's not a sustainable pattern.
John Wetzel is the secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. John, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you. It was a good time.
Likewise. Coming up, from Abe Lincoln's hat to Dorothy's ruby slippers, we'll look at the history of America in 101 objects. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.